webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for July 17th, 2014, coming to you from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where with Arthur C. Clarke, we say the greatest tragedy in mankind's entire history may be the hijacking of morality by religion. And from Houston, Texas, here is the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, the Kentucky Colonel himself, Michael Williams. G'day, Michael.
G'day, Barris. How's your day?
Oh, Michael. You really want to start there? Do you really want to start right there?
I really just kind of wanted to, yeah.
Yeah. Family, we are so... What was that?
But maybe we won't.
Yeah, really. Jam me in the pile and then say, oh, maybe not. Family, for the last couple of weeks, we've been having serious audio problems, and we think that they're behind us. We can't be absolutely certain. We are trying. Michael thinks, actually, that I'm very trying, without even trying to be. But anyway, we think that the worst is behind us, and would you believe most of what we think were our problems were caused by a faulty headset. One of the hardest things that you could have ever tracked it down to, but we've installed some new equipment. We've got a backup plan working today, which I hope backs it up. And we are going to get this show out to you come hell or high water. That's not a swear word, is it, mate, when I say it like that, is it?
I don't think so. Okay. I think we'll let it pass.
Or as they say here in Tennessee, God willing, and the creeks don't rise. So
you could say Hades or high water.
Hades. Okay. It just takes the edge off it, really, doesn't it? Eh? What the Hades is that all about? No, it doesn't work for me. Does it work for you?
I know. No, I think I'm going to stick with the original.
This show has been recorded. This is the third attempt. 1 week ago, we had to give up halfway through the show, Mike, and we recorded this very show 2 days ago, and the whole thing was jitterbugging all the way through it, and I just had to trash it, and I am so sorry for the extra work you've had to go to, Mike, but thank you.
Not a problem. That's what we're here for.
Now, we've got a pledge drive this week, don't we?
We do indeed.
Hang on. Just before we go there, folks, I've heard the show, you see, because this is my second time recording it. So I know what we're in for, and I want to promise you, you will not be sorry. Let's get the pledge work done here, and then you are going to be in for a real treat, I promise you. So pledge drive, Mike, tell me about the pledge drive.
Pledge drive is clicking right along. I think we're just above 4,000, somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000, my last count with Jeff. We really are not budging very much on these monthlies that we need so desperately to make up for.
What do you mean by that, Mike?
Well, the monthlies that we need to, quote, make up for is the fact that over the last 4 months we've had a small number of people who have found it difficult to continue at the moment. These are not people who have lost interest or do not want to fund or help the Gospel Revolution financially anymore. These are people who have had their own personal financial crisis that has come up, and they find their funds limited, and they have very graciously called in and let us know that they're not going to be able to continue at the moment. Most of them say that it's going to be just a month or two or 4 months or whatever. And first off, let me say to those that had to stop, thank you so much for what you've done, because obviously if something has come up that has caused you to have to quit momentarily, you certainly weren't floating in extra cash all along. So We know that your gifts, as much as well as with most of the people who support the Gospel Revolution, that your funds come from your heart as much as they come from your wallet. And I know most of you have way more in your hearts than you do in your wallets. So the shortfall that we are dealing with is about $1,000 a month that we have fallen behind because of the drop-offs of monthly support. We are in a position, we were in a position where that if we raised $400 a month this pledge drive from where we were, we would still be doing really well. We've done well over the last 2.5 years or so, where that we've caught up. We've stayed pretty well caught up with just, you know, nip and tucks of falling behind here and there. But this one is not something we've experienced in quite some time. So for those of you that can, one time, monthlies are very important this time around. But even the one times are going to help us get caught back up again. And we definitely are standing in a place where that we need you to be aware of it. And we are certainly aware of it, and we're doing all that we can and to get us through this. So we appreciate your help.
We need around about $1,000 a month in new pledge monthly pledges?
We actually need between $1,400 and $1,500 in new monthly pledges. We're not just making up for what fell off. We're trying to stay at pace with what we would have been needing to do during this pledge drive without that drop.
Where are we now?
I think $25 a month is where we're at right now.
Oh, Michael. Okay. Now, look, family, none of us are getting rich doing this. I haven't been able to line my backyard pool with marble and mirrors. And Michael doesn't have a pool yet. Well, actually, come to think of it, neither do I. Or Jeffrey. And it's been a couple of pledge drives since we actually did a real pledge drive. Because if you remember last pledge drive, we were collecting for Jeffrey's new fifth wheel, which he's happily ensconced in now down there in Florida. But what we are looking for right now is $1,400 to $1,500 a month in new pledge drives, in new monthly pledges. Now, I know how hard that is for some of us, but let me just tell you what I'm prepared to do. And this is no biggie because I'm not actually paid a fortune. None of us are. But it's enough for me to buy my groceries. So let's just leave it there. And I buy my equipment use that money towards buying equipment that helps this radio show go get better, hopefully, Michael, not like the last week or two. What I'm prepared to do is put all of my month's income from the Gospel Revolution, I am prepared to stack it up against $1,100. Now, I'm not going for the full $1,500. $1,100 is what I did last week, Mike, and I'm going to stay right there. If we get $1,100 in new monthly pledges, this pledge drive, I am not banking any of my checks, and at the end of the month, I'm going to have them mailed back to Hazel, and she can do with them whatever she wants. But I will donate my month's income. It's not a dollar-for-dollar thing. It is, if we get $1,100 in new monthly pledges, I will donate my month's income to the Gospel Revolution. And I just need to... Just so that you get an accurate picture of this, my wife is on disability. She's just recently had a stroke, and I get, as I said, I get grocery money from the Gospel Revolution. That's not a put down. That's, you know, we just don't. No one's putting their hand out to get rich here. So, what do you reckon, Mike? Does that sound fair to you? Oh, by the way, the first time I mentioned this to Mike as a possibility, he said I forbid it. The second time, and later in that same conversation, he says, well, I wouldn't be in favor of it, but that is Michael and this is me, you see. And the beautiful thing about the Gospel Revolution is we can do whatever we like, actually. And, I mean, short of calling the boss a dill, we'll probably keep our jobs.
This was something I definitely was not in favor of, but I certainly understand Barris's heart and what he wants to do. And we're very grateful for that. One of the things that we're waiting on also is me going into retirement.
I thought you were going to say into receivership then for a minute.
Yeah, that one of the two is going to have to happen quickly. So, but my retirement is going to help us, and but that doesn't. My official retirement begins when I turn 62. That's August the 16th. However, with Social Security being drawn, that doesn't start until October, the middle of October. So we're holding our breath, we're treading water, and it takes me down a little bit below what I was on, what was would have been required, the minimum required by Social Security that you can earn while you're on it. But it is going to be a savings, and it'll be a tax saving also. Between now and then, it's bleak. I'm telling you, I just never dreamed that we would be back at this point again. But it really is kind of bleak. So we are leaning on you, and we appreciate you guys for what you have done and what you will be able to do to help us get through this period of time.
What brought me
to this? Really,
sorry,
go ahead.
What brought me to this place was the fact that you rang us and emailed me and asked me to hold my check. And I don't know if I'm telling stories out of school here, but when you're that close and you're talking about grocery money, our backs are up against the wall, family, and we hope that you'll be able to help us.
Mm-hmm. We appreciate it so much.
And here right now is Jeffrey all the way from Florida to tell us who has blessed us with pledges this month so far.
Thanks, Barris. We've gotten quite a bit further here on our pledge drive as far as number of people who have given. We're still really in a pretty bad spot on new monthly pledges, though. So I just ask you to think about doing a new monthly pledge. Give it some consideration. We really need $1,000 a month in new monthly pledges just to barely break even from the people who had to stop for a little while or have had to stop altogether just in the past month and a half. So be creative. If you want to do 10 or 20 bucks a week or do $200 every 6 months or something like that, however you want to do it, give me a call. We'll set it up exactly the way you want to do it. But please give us the consideration to do something monthly, whatever the amount is. Don't be embarrassed of anything that you consider too small. It's not too small to us. But yeah, please give it some thought for us, if you would. Let me tell you who has given since Barris and I talked last. Starting out with Pat and Richard Salonen in Lorium, Michigan. They've been around with us since Mike was still doing tapes instead of CDs. Walter Wilson in Selma, Alabama. Dale Van Sickle in the Villages, right across the lake here from me, here in Florida. Jan Heller in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. Bob Hines from McDonough, Georgia. He's the author of Redemption, A Declaration of All, Not a Choice for a Few. Michael Price in Scarborough, Maine. Rob Wessel up in Grafton, Wisconsin. Arthur Wirch in Brandon, Manitoba. Tom Tonsky in Canton, Ohio. Ted and Pat Winsett, Pastors Ted and Pat Winsett in Decatur, Alabama. Mike and Joyce Camelotis in Mesa, Arizona. Brad and Holly Wilson in Queen Creek, Arizona. Carrie and Rita Waitman in Whitehall, Montana. Lost my place. Bud and Ruth Ramsey in Park River, North Dakota. Robert Collier in Longview, Texas. Paul Havard in Cheltenham, which is in Gloucester, outside of London, England. Al Vitale in Gainesville, Georgia. And John Newbigging in Edinburgh, Scotland. Then we've got Yvonne DeClean. She's in Waterford, Wisconsin. And Annette Hogan. Annette Hogan in Union, New Jersey. That's the new people who've given since the last time I spoke. It's not the total list of people, just because we needed to make this a little shorter. So, next week, I guess I'll get back with you who has given since then. But folks, you're not alone out there. Look at all these people and look at where they're from. I forgot David Dwyer in Brisbane, Australia. People around the world, there are gospel revolutionaries. You are not the only one. And there are, for every one name I've read, there's 100 more. Everybody's spread far and wide. And please get your name on this list of one of our givers. Thanks. That's all I have for you. We'll see you on the weekend.
Gospel Revolution.
Latest videos from the Gospel Revolution? You need to.
If you're wondering why I'm not on too many PowerCasts, it's because I'm spending too much time on YouTube and not watching it. I'm performing videos on YouTube. And if you have not seen one of those videos, you need to go to our video channel. Just log into YouTube and type in Gospel Revolution 1, all one word, Gospel Revolution and the numeral 1. Or you can link to it from our homepage on our website, gospelrevolution.com. There's a link to our YouTube channel. So, everybody, stay in touch with us in every way. Subscribe to our newsletters and listen to our PowerCast and watch our videos on YouTube. And we'll see you everywhere.
You wanted to talk about changes today.
Changes. Paul used this term about things having changed, or speaking of them as that they shall be changed. And you'll know this is changed when this happens, and that will be changed. And if this has changed, then this will by necessity have had to change. And I found out there was 5 things, Barris, that Paul said had changed, and therefore by necessity had to have a change also. So I went back and started looking at the things that Paul said had changed. And Hebrews chapter 7, verse 12 says, "For the priesthood being changed." This is the one of the places and the first place we're going to stop where Paul talked about this incredible issue of that things changed. Now, we've been emphasizing the fact that the brick wall, people call it many different things. The brick wall, everything changed at the cross, many different statements, the line of demarcation, that the comparisons are not between your good life and your bad life. The comparisons are between before the cross and after the cross. And the things that changed at that point are the things that give validity to the gospel. Now, let me say as we get into this, Barris, that Christianity acknowledges none of these changes. None of them. They do not acknowledge these changes, and especially the guys who first established the translation of these of the New Testament. Because Hebrews 7:12 says, "For the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of the law." Now, the change that was made in the priesthood was that it was done away with. The first priesthood, the Levite priesthood, and Jesus becoming the great high priest, something changed. It changed drastically by the fact that the Catholic Church still has priests at all. It's just shocking when you look at the term priest and what that means biblically. Even in the Bible that they translated, there is no validation for that whatsoever. It really is quite amazing. But that is not the comparison Paul is making. Paul is not making a comparison between Catholic priest and Orthodox priest or anyone else. He's talking about the priesthood that was the Levite priesthood, and then the great high priesthood of Jesus. People who listened to our last show, which was a recording from 1998 of the great high priest. It was CD number 2. The tremendous amount of things in there. I actually listened to this over again. It's really quite amazing what's in this series. So we've got the first thing here that we're going to talk about that changed. And the first thing that changed was the priesthood. Now, what changed about the priesthood? Did it change from them wearing colorful clothing to black and white clothing? Did the priesthood change from it being Levites to some other tribe of Israel? Just how did it change? Well, you have to look at this whole teaching about the change of the priesthood actually begins in Hebrews chapter 5, goes through chapter 6 and all of chapter 7, where it talks about Jesus becoming the great high priest after the order of Melchizedek. This actually spans three chapters in Hebrews. So it should not be something that we're confused about at all, but it seems to be something that we have left out altogether, either where the Catholics are concerned and they still have priests in their organization, or with the rest of Christianity who do not understand the difference between the old priesthood and the new priesthood, which is Christ himself after the order of Melchizedek. The reason this priesthood has changed is because of the necessity for it to change. There are two things that Paul gave for reasons for necessity of the change of this priesthood. Number one is that these priests not only offered up sacrifices for the sins of the people, but also for themselves. That is what you call a faulty priesthood. The other thing that Paul pointed out that was faulty about this priesthood was that they died. So your priest always was changed. You went from one priest to another priest. Now, the reason that they died, it's not just that they died. You've got to realize the element of death and the risk of death that was built into the priesthood of the first covenant. They actually started tying ropes around these guys' waist as they would go into the Holy of Holies to take the blood of a bull or a goat and to offer that to God for the sins of the people. Now, if this priest was not ceremonially, there's no way he could be spiritually cleansed. That did not come except through the blood of Christ. And with the blood of Christ, it was not necessary that Christ offer his blood for himself also, because he was born without sin. I know this is getting a little bit weighty, but for those of you in the Gospel Revolution, you've heard much of this before. But it is vitally important that we understand to the degree that the priesthood changed. So what would happen is they started tying ropes around these guys, because if you went into the presence of God, or the priest went into the presence of God to offer this sacrifice, and he was not ceremonially cleansed according to the flesh, he would drop dead inside the Holy of Holies. Well, the problem was, who's going to go get him? Because the same reasons, if someone had to go through this extensive external ceremonial cleansing to carry out this external earthly ceremonial type and shadow of the coming of Christ, and if these priests died having gone through this ceremony but having missed it somehow, messed up the ceremony somehow, what all the disqualifications were of the priesthood, I don't know. But the fact of it is that if they didn't qualify, who was going to go in and get them if they did die? Because the priesthood, if they did not enter in ceremonially cleansed, they would die. Now, that's why they tied a rope around the guy. I remember the first time I was teaching on this, and I said, this was the first pope on a rope. You know, so I think that's kind of spread around a little bit. But probably not amongst the Catholics, but it has around the Protestants. Mm-hmm. So this really was, the Pope on the rope here. And the reason they tied it around his waist is because as they would go in, they would have these bells on the end of their robes that as long as they were carrying out the service of offering this to God, the sacrifice of the animal to God, these little bells would be ringing. But they knew that if these bells stopped ringing, there was a problem. And as long as the little bells were ringing, there was room to keep rejoicing. But when the bells stopped ringing, the people stopped singing. There was nothing to sing about. They knew that their priest had died in service in the Holy of Holies. Their only option was to take the rope that led all the way out to the outer court and start tugging on that rope and drag his dead carcass out of the Holy of Holies, because anyone else walking in would have died also. Now, the two problems with the first priesthood, again, let me say this once again, was that it was imperfect because they not only offered up sacrifices for the sins of the people, but also for their own. That was one way that the Holy Ghost showed us this priesthood was not perfect. The other one that was pointed out to us that the Holy Ghost was able to teach us about the priesthood and that it being imperfect was the fact that this priesthood, they all died, whether in service or just natural causes. They all died. So the need for a new priest, it did not just alter or modify the Levite priesthood, which was by the law. You see, it was the law that required these people to be priests. It was the law that decided which tribe would serve as priests, and it was the Levite priesthood. That's the reason they were kind of puzzled about this when they were trying to figure out at Jesus after the cross, because they realized the fulfillment of so many things, but Jesus was not of the tribe of Levi. And that's when they begin to realize, Paul especially began to realize even more, of the absolute total change of this priesthood. So we had a priesthood that was changed completely. That, number one, he did not have to offer up sacrifices for his own sins. And number two, through the suffering of death, Jesus was appointed great high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek, never to have to go through this service or ceremony again. And Jesus did not enter into temples made with hands. Jesus entered into heaven itself, and not with the blood of bulls and goats, but with the blood of his own self, not having to offer his blood for his own sin, because he was born sinless. He remained sinless. And we've gone into some detail about this, that Jesus would have remained sinless even if he'd have broken the law, because Jesus was born of the Spirit and therefore was not under the law. Nothing that is born of the Spirit is under the law. And we have had that repeated many times in the New Testament.
So that's the law and that's the priesthood.
That is the priesthood. Now the law, he says.
Well, that's just the priesthood. Oh, this is
that's just the priesthood.
This is going to be a long show.
No, I'm going to yarn on here. So now, because the reason I said all that is to give the comparison to the law. That is what Paul says here in Hebrews 7:12. There is made of necessity a change of the law. Because this priesthood changed, the law itself had to change. Obviously, because now we have a priesthood that is not even appointed by the law. So the law has now become completely ineffective.
So the law didn't change because Jesus changed it. It became changed because the priesthood was at an end.
Yes, the priesthood, the law that appointed the priesthood made, because that priesthood ended, therefore the law itself ended also. Because it was not a law that made Jesus the great high priest, it was a promise. Jesus became great high priest according to Paul's teaching he became the great high priest by promise, not by any law whatsoever. So when you're wondering as to what degree did the priesthood change? Did it change a little bit or did it change totally? It changed totally. So to what degree then must we accept that the law has changed? Did it change a little bit or did it change totally? It changed totally. Was the first priesthood, does it still exist at all? The first priesthood does not exist at all. So what do we have to conclude that by necessity has happened to the law? By necessity. This isn't my preaching and teaching or my doctrine. This is by necessity.
So Hebrews 7 verse 12, for the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of the law. But that doesn't say it all went away. That just says it had to be a change.
It does say that it has to be changed. But as you go back and read the story, you find out that it was the thing that caused it to be changed is that the first priesthood was done away with completely. That is what changed, is that it was done away with. But the fact of it is we missed the whole thing, this change of priesthood. To have a priesthood to continue after the priesthood of Jesus was established is an absolute denial of what has changed. So the first thing we can say that Christianity, Catholicism in the beginning, missed it so badly. They missed the change, what changed so badly, they continued a priesthood here on earth. Now that's missing that something changed, and that's missing what changed. I remember when I was first studying this, Barris, and when I started understanding to what degree the priesthood had changed, then I had to accept that whatever degree the priesthood had changed, that change had also happened to the law. To every degree that the priesthood changed, it is by necessity that the law also changed.
So that's the priesthood and the law. Is that,
yes.
Is that it? Are we wrapping the show up here?
That's well, for those two things, we could wrap the whole show up and say we've done a good job already, but...
What's next?
There's three more to come.
Oh, man, that's going to be a long show.
Gospel Revolution.
Now, you will see that all of the things that Paul said changed will have necessitated that all these other things changed at the same time.
What, these next three?
All of these three. And all of these three will have made it necessary for the priesthood to change. All of these other three will have made it necessary for the law to change.
Any one of these changing meant all the others had to change. So it doesn't matter which one you go with, the others had to change as well. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. This was a profound change.
Well, would you say it a bit clearer, please?
This was a profound change.
Hey, you're not paying. If we get our pledge drives up, mate, you're not paying me this week, so I can talk to you any way I want.
You do anyway. So the next one, again, of course, is Hebrews chapter 1, verse 12. And as a vesture shalt thou fold them up, and they shall be changed. But thou art the same, and thy years shall not fail. Now, to really get this in context as we go through this, and we've got to back up just a few verses, as always. And verse 10 is a great place to start here. And thou, Lord, in the beginning hast laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the works of thine hands. Now, this is very profound if you stop and allow yourself to absorb the gravity of this. We think of the fact that God laid the foundation of the heavens and the earth, so that which is highest and that which is lowest. This is the whole spectrum of creation as far as biblically or scripturally speaking is concerned. And thou, Lord, in the beginning hast laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the works of thine hands. Now, the second thing that we learn about this is not that just that God made the heavens and the earth, as Genesis states, but also that these are the works of his hands. Now get this, they shall perish. Now, this whole structure that God created that is recorded in the book of Genesis, Paul is now informing the world, this is all going to perish. Now, if we mistakenly follow Christianity in the term world in Matthew chapter 24 and mistakenly identify the book of Revelation, if we mistakenly look at all of the things that they is called eschatology or end time doctrine, automatically this verse falls to something that is going to be futuristic. What we get here is a very quick glimpse, a recap, if you will, of creation. Okay, you establish this. We know exactly what you did. You're God. We know that you created the heavens and the earth, but that's all going to be destroyed. It will all perish. Now, you don't have to read into some other book to find out what it is that was going to perish. It was this structure that was going to perish. This God in his heaven and man on his earth, that was going to perish. What was going to perish? God in his heaven and man on his earth was going to perish. It was going to perish in this way. It was just going to get old. It was going to be just like an old garment. And it was going to be like it's something just being folded up. And it just popped in my mind, just from reading over this, the only other place I remember somebody folding something up was the fact that when Jesus rose from the dead, they went into the tomb and they found his garment folded like a vesture, folded and laid to the side. It wasn't needed anymore. I really do believe that is a typology that Jesus gave of this very thing, of this old way that had been put away, that heaven and earth had totally changed. When Jesus rose from the dead, folks, heaven and earth changed, a drastic change. And even possibly the fact that Jesus folded up his grave clothes was the way that he was showing that this had been fulfilled even in and of itself. So he says, now all of this is going to happen, but then suddenly he says, but to which of the angels said he at any time, sit thou at my right hand until I make thine enemies thy footstool? What does this have to do with angels? What does this have to do with, and of course he's talking to Jesus. We know that these verses, these prophecies were speaking of Christ. And then it goes on down and we begin to see this powerful. Now, remember, he said that this entire structure of the foundation of creation was going to change. But remember, look, and let's stop off at verse 5. He says, for unto the angels hath he not put in subjection the world to come, whereof we speak. Now, he's speaking of the fact that this old world was going to pass away. There was going to be a completely new heaven and earth that was on the rise. But he said, but you got to stop and notice that the angels are not going to be over this one. For unto the angels hath he not put in subjection the world to come. It's clear the world that was in subjection to the angelic realm. As Paul goes into this detail, because it was God the Father, there was the angelic realm, and then there was mankind. So man, or the angelic realm, was higher in the structure of creation than man was. Now, again, note here that he said that in this new world that God was making out of the one he was just destroying, that there would be, that the angels wouldn't be in that place anymore. That is so incredible to me that we've just let this just come and go, because the fact of it is the world that was here before the cross, that world was in subjection to the angels. Now, the problem with that is that a third of the angels had fallen and the world was in subjection to not just the good angels, but they were in subjection to the bad angels. It says, but in a certain place testified, saying, what is man that thou art mindful of him, or the son of man that thou visitest him? So he's saying that even though here's God and this structure, here's God, the angels, of course, created before man, and therefore the world was also in subjection to the angels. Good or bad, we were in subjection to the angels. He says, but and he's quoting from Psalms here. It says, who is man that thou art mindful of him, or the son of man? Thou madest him a little lower than the angels. Here we have confirmation of this description of this original creation. Where did he create man? He created mankind a little lower than the angels. However, he did crown man with glory and honor and did set him over the works of thy hands. That is quoted directly out of Genesis, where God put man on this earth and created all the things on the earth and says, now I'm giving you charge over everything. Everything is in subjection to you on this planet. Now, the fact of it is that position that man had was still a little lower than the angels. Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet. That is verse 8. Now, he's talking about the first world. Don't get confused. Paul's telling the story chronologically here. Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet. You know, the cows, the birds, the all of the things that God said. Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet. For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now at the point of the story, we see not yet all things put under him. In the first world, the world that God was going to fold up like a vesture and put away, in that world, all things were not under man's feet. All things were not in subjection unto man. Well, okay, so we have this structure. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that, yeah, well, and we're still talking about dealing with demons and devils and things like this. This may be the best explanation as to why you don't have to put up with the devil at all anymore of anything in the entire Bible. If you understand this world that changed, this incredible change that happened, to the point, to what degree did it change? It was all done away with. It's just like the priesthood, just like the law, ergo, just like the heavens and the earth, that there would be this dramatic change. To what degree? Completely destroyed. It is done away with. It is made completely non-existent. But we see Jesus. Oh, okay. So the first world, God, angels, and man left man in complete authority over everything on the earth, yet it left the angelic realm higher than mankind. Now, we got a problem, of course, with this angelic realm having one-third of it. How many of them that is at the time? We have that many angels that now are in rebellion against God, however that you look at those verses out of Isaiah. We do see that Lucifer was present in the garden. And isn't it amazing that man had authority over everything? And there we see this played out, that this angelic realm that took on the form of a serpent, that man was in subjection to him. Now, Paul said that this original world, and I don't understand all this, Barris, but it bears being bears out to be a wise thing, I think, to state it just out loud. He says that first world man was created subject to weakness, subject to vanity, but by necessity. Now, whenever we understand those things, we'll understand all of this a lot better, because obviously that man was created subject to this angelic realm by necessity.
Well, which verse is this?
I don't know.
Okay.
Let's look it up.
No, don't worry, mate. That's how I used to do most of my preaching.
No. I'm going to stay on this page. You look it up.
Necessity. Oh, jeez.
Was made subject to vanity. Put in vanity and necessity, and you'll get it. If you spell the words right.
Right there is a big if, mate.
I speak from experience, as you can tell.
Well, necessity doesn't get it. Let me go vanity. Romans 8, verse 20. For the creature was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who, sub- who had subjected the same in hope.
I may be quoting it wrong, which is a good thing we've brought this up if I am.
Because for the creature was made subject to vanity, not willingly. Well, that means unwillingly. It wasn't voluntary. So that sounds like it was somebody else's will in there.
Exactly. You know, I may be remembering the term necessity incorrectly, but this is the verse that I am been making reference to. So it seems, according to Paul's preaching, that man was created by God knowingly in this weakened place, that it was was something that was necessary, that this was the part of the plan. Now, I don't understand all of that, but we do know that according to Paul's understanding of this, this was made this way. The fact that even Adam and Eve were subject to this temptation, that was a weakness that was built in, if you will. And here in Hebrews, he gives us this wonderful and articulate description. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death. That one sentence, so packed full of understanding and the process as to which this entire creation was going to be changed. Heaven and earth was going to be changed. Changed in what way? The same way the priesthood was changed. The same way the law was changed. The priesthood was done away with. The law was done away with. What was going to happen to heaven and earth? It was going to be done away with. This entire thing was going to be changed. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels, which was a part of this creation and this creation structure, crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, should taste of death for every man. This is where this death that came upon Adam would be terminated, that Jesus would taste of that death for everyone. For it became him for whom are all things and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons unto glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through suffering. For both he that sanctifieth and they that are sanctified are one, which cause he is not ashamed to call them brethren. The place where Paul makes this teaching even clearer is Ephesians, where he takes this structure once again and tells us how that Jesus came here. Obviously, he came here in this place also beneath the angels, on the same level as mankind, and that through the process of death, that he took all of mankind into his own body. We all died with him. We all rose with him. And we're all seated with him now in heavenly places, according to Ephesians, Colossians, and other places that Paul taught on this so exquisitely. So this is the change of all creation. This was the destruction of creation. These are the works of thy hands, and they shall be destroyed. Now, we have to read chapter 2, which we've gone into, or we're going to become Christians here. You'd say, well, how would we become Christians? We'd be looking for some future point in which the heavens and the earth are going to be destroyed, and miss the gospel completely in the fact that heaven and earth has already been destroyed. This entire structure has been rearranged. The angelic realm has no power over this new creation. He just said that. He just said, don't you see that the angelic realm will have zero. The new world will not be in subjection to the angelic realm.
Can I get an amen? Yeah.
Spread the religion of the rhythm of life. Gospel revolution.
The new world will not be in subjection to the angelic realm. So here we are, folks. We are in Christ in heavenly places. Christ is in us in earthly places. And he has chosen this place to live. So what do we have? You know as well as I do, Barris, goodness gracious, I used to be called America's by some America's foremost authority on demonology. I fought the devil. I rebuked. I talked about this third of angels and what they're doing and how they're doing and leaving the kitchen window open. Like fly comes in. If you leave the door open, the devil's going to come in. You don't have to do anything extremely wrong. Just leave the door open. Leave the window open and fly's going to come in. And you know where the flies come from. Those flies are from the pit of hell and blah, blah, blah. And all of the cross analogies that portrayed this story to the point to where, and I'm going to mention this because I think it's important to know, we didn't abandon these doctrines just because, I think I'll think something else. We actually, I know I did, and I'm quite sure that Barris has also, abandoned these doctrines because we saw the gross and horrible abuse that it brought upon people.
There you go.
This led to abuse. Now, there was a church in North Carolina that had asked me to come there and speak, which I was glad to go. I went and spoke at the church. And there was this couple that was pastoring the church. The lady was a little bit older. She had just married herself a younger, tall, handsome husband. She was the spiritual authority, though, and made that clear. The comments about him being the head of the household was tongue-in-cheek, believe me. And
he might have been the head, but she was the neck that moved him, eh?
She absolutely was, because she was an intercessor. She was the
one. Oh, that's different, an intercessor.
Yes.
Why didn't you say that?
Once you're an intercessor, and she was the pastor of the church.
You know the crazy thing I always used to think of in Christianity? Intercession. Yeah, there were intercessors, prayer intercessors, and they were treated as if it was a gift of God. And it was the only gift that wasn't in the Bible. It was not there anywhere.
Exactly. And so you're not going to be surprised at what these people wound up with. So they started their own church school, as many people did at that time. And I was brought in a couple of times. It filled the place. I had really good meetings there. We did do some casting out of devils. I was beginning to change my mind about many things at the time, but still very well known for doing certain things and was expected to do them when I arrived. And I did them as long as I did, until the point came to where that I knew that what I was doing was just wrong.
You were the performing monkey.
I really was. But let me tell you what, this monkey performed one of his last roundups here at this church because
they took the peanuts away?
No, after I left there, Barris, it was I'd heard about this. And I was disturbed about it greatly. Someone made me aware of it just about the time I was leaving. I had phone calls afterwards to confirm the stories that in this church school they started these children's day out every day with what they called blasting. Now, blasting. And this was the fact that the only holy place many of these people were was in school and in church. Mm-hmm. And every other place they went home was demons were everywhere. They walked down the streets, demons were getting on them and all of this stuff. This is how they started those children's day. And this is from kindergarten, first, second, third graders. They would stand in these babies' faces and scream at the top of their lungs until they themselves were red in the face, screaming and blasting the devils out of them that they had picked up overnight. Jeez. This was not a one-time thing. This wasn't a once-a-week ritual. This was every morning for these children. This is how they started their school day.
Can you imagine some of them kids? No, Mommy, I don't want to go to school.
Yeah. And the parents probably not even knowing the extent of the abuse that was taking place in these children. And I remember just the self-righteousness of this couple. I just get a chill down my spine. I hope they listen and find out I'm talking about them. And I hope that they have changed their ways. because this was child abuse, and if anybody should have been arrested and thrown in jail for abuse of a child, especially in a school or church setting, it should have been this couple. Hmm. I was devastated after I left there. Of course, they were using me as validation for this doctrine of casting out devils, but I did not know that they were doing this blasting thing that as they started their school. So the reason that many of
they called it the Mike Williams Happy Hour, fasting, yeah, blasting, and casting.
Blasting children. Oh, my gosh. I shudder the thought.
It beggars the imagination.
What children have to go through. You know, I can tell you that when religion is in charge, there are two groups in particular that are going to suffer, and that's women and children. Follow any religion that you want. And I'm telling you that women and children are going to suffer where religion reigns. That just is not the case where the gospel is concerned. You still have the Southern Baptists forbidding women to preach and to – goodness gracious, they don't even like them holding public office unless they can get their agenda passed. And if they can make sure that homosexuals couldn't get married – they'd elect anybody to office if they could make sure that that goal was realized. But that goal has fallen, and it will continue to fall. They are not going to be able to accomplish this backward annihilation of a whole group of people. They're not going to be able to accomplish it. They're trying to export it to Africa now, and we've reported on that extensively. Don't forget that, folks. We keep tabs on these folks.
We were the first people that, as far as we know, we were the first people who did that.
Yes, exactly. And we will be the last to do it if we get a chance to. So these doctrines, we backed away from these doctrines, Barris, not just because it was reasonable. It was because one of the main ingredients was we saw the severe abuse of this. My goodness. It is amazing how human beings want to take spirituality and use it to rule over other people. I got involved in a church that it was the last church I ever got involved with, and the gearing of that entire ministry was set up for the manipulation and control of the people in the congregation.
Hey, mate, I've got to tell you something. I was listening to a guy today, and I decided we're going to do this. You and I are going to tear this one apart. We're going to eat it up. And this guy, what he did was he took, I think it was somebody called Bob Larson, who's apparently he's a magic faker, and he's a troublemaker, really. But Bob Larson is a guy that loves talking about cults. He's made his fortune out of talking about cults. And in one of his books, he said, here are the marks of a cult. And 15 marks of a cult, and every single one of these marks, mate, was Christianity. This guy was making the case for cults, not realizing for one second he was describing his own cult.
And he was describing his own ministry, yeah.
And you talk – well, actually more than his ministry, because when you take his – and actually you can take not everybody's but most people's definitions of the marks of a cult, and you can apply them at Christianity, and they all fit. So the point this guy was making, and I think we're going to say the same thing, is Christianity is the biggest cult of them all.
When you measure it up against the gospel, that is absolute truth. There is nothing that is a greater antithesis to the gospel. You might think that Islam or Buddhism or, you know, pick some other religion. But the greatest antithesis to the gospel is Christianity, because it is the one who has tried to take all the terminology of the gospel and the name of Christ and the very birth of Christ and the death and the resurrection of Christ and incorporate it. But even as they incorporate all of this about the God that is in the gospel and they convert it into Christianity, they deny all of these changes, every single one of them. They deny. Obviously, look. I mean, the priest, when the Catholics started the priesthood up again, it's obvious they denied these changes, that the last priesthood was Christ. 1,500 years of Catholicism. It's obvious that the Catholics and the Protestants do not agree that the law has been done away with or put away. People say, there's no place in the Bible that says the law has been done away with. Well, we can read it to you several places, and it repeats it over and over, even in context, as in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, where it affirms continually that the law has been done away with. These changes. In fact, we'll be touching on that probably in the next show.
Yep, there are two more. Let's talk about that for a minute. There are two more changes, and I remember when we recorded this several days ago, and it won't ever see the light of day because of the problems with the audio. But these were the most exciting ones. Now the others are exciting. Don't get me wrong, but these two—they're
amazing.
Yeah. Oh, they're going to blow your hat off. Family, we are going to continue this show next week, and we're going to continue the pledge drive next week too. Just to recap, these changes, any of which necessitate changes in all the rest, the law, the priesthood, and the works of his hands, the heavens and the earth that he folded up as a vesture.
Mm-hmm.
And put away.
And it is put away. And I'm telling you, to try to exercise Christianity is like putting on those grave clothes. It truly is. Trying to relate to God as external in any way is relating to a creation that has been destroyed. Trying to relate to God as being in his image is an absolute ludicrous thing to do, because you are no longer in the image of God. This is one of the major things that changed. You're no longer in the image of God. You and God are one. You see, an image is something that's outside. You can't be in his image. That was part of the faultiness of the original creation, or the weakness, if you will. I won't say faulty. I'll use the term that Paul used, weakness. And this weakness that was subject to vanity, the entire creation, and that would also include mankind. As we go through these, folks, we're talking about the things that changed. And let me tell you, I can prove to you, and we're going to do more research. We'll come back to you with even more next week. But these things that changed. The only thing that teaches these things is the gospel that teaches that these things changed. Let me also tell you that Paul is the only writer who teaches that these things changed. These changes are not spoken of by the other writers of the New Testament. This is one single writer who spoke about these things, even as the seven mysteries that Paul spoke of. That we told you about. None of the other writers mentioned any mysteries. None of them mentioned any changes taking place. None of them used this terminology whatsoever. So this is big stuff, folks, and we're really glad that you've been with us on this show, and I can't wait to get to the rest of these. We'll recap just a bit as we get started on the next show before we go into the last two, and you're going to be thrilled. It's absolutely incredible.
You know, it's not the people who agree with us, it's the people who question us that help us make progress. That's how we've done it since day one. What are your thoughts on what we've just been talking about? Why don't you call me on area code 234-564-0971 and let us know what you think about that. Else you can just email us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. That was freedom@gospelrevolution.com. What do you think about that? And so it is that we must leave you, friends. We love you one and all, and we especially thank all you who, with your financial support, keep this message of grace and peace going out every week. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel, call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone us at area code 234-564-0971. Leave a message for me. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we are always up for a Facebook chat at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. And so it is good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it is good night from Michael Williams right here in Houston, Texas, reminding you that the very first word spoken from the moon was Houston.
Australia rules.
Australia rules in sport and in football, but maybe.
Hey, did you hear? You in the year 2000 Olympics, in the Olympics of the year 2000. Australians cleaned your face, mate. Australians would not let the Americans in the pool hardly, and one of our Aussie sports heroes was a fellow by the name of Ian Thorpe, great swimmer. He set record after record. You talk about Mark Spitz. This guy was beating his records. He came out 3 days ago and said, "I'm gay."
Wow!
And the interviewer, who was a national hero in England, Michael Parkinson, said, "Why didn't you come out earlier?" And he said, "Wait for it, mate." He said, "You talk about shame. Here it is. Mm-hmm. I didn't think Australians would want a gay person as a champion."
My goodness.
So remember to join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
I already know it's going to be better.
Nailing up my thoughts on this Wittenberg rhyme, hammering out my heart in a steady 4/4 time. You see, I can't sing the incantations of unbelief. I can't do the meetings and the programs and the crusades anymore. I can't press in, I can't seek, I can't sacrifice, and I can't pay the price. But if he said the kingdom is at hand, then I believe it's here. And if he said the time is fulfilled, then I have no end time fear. And if he said it's finished, then I believe it's done. And if it's done, then it's over. It's finished for me, for you, for everyone. I'm telling you, it's causing such consternation. Makes me think this evangelical paradigm is built on the wrong foundation. Cause if you're looking at your fellow man, and you can't see the master's hand, and if you can't see the breath of the divine in every person's eyes, the spirit of Christ in every face you meet and everyone you greet, then you're gonna judge them. And if you judge them, then you will condemn them. And then you'll have to save them, and change them, and rearrange them. And that isn't unconditional love, brother. It isn't good news to be told that you're unacceptable to the Father that loved you since time began. Universalism. I'm just talking about the cross, because the love of Christ compels me. One died for all, then all have died. die. So if your heart is kinder than your doctrine, then your doctrine's gotta die. Because the end of all our preaching and the end of all our words will be when we love one another as he loves us. No more need for scripture. The word become flesh, humanity caught in a divine embrace as we behold him face to face. In the mirror of our likeness, our original identity revealed in the perfect law of liberty, nothing left concealed. Naked and unashamed, together we stand.
Fire, power, the gospel of grace.
This is my repentance as I'm coming to my senses. This is my rhyme about a new paradigm.
One body, one spirit, one hope, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God, and Father of all, who is above all and through all.